I was just sitting down thinking back when I was a little boy in Louisville, Kentucky, fighting my first amateur fight, Ronnie O'Keefe. I won on a split decision in the third round. And I was paid $4 for the fight. And I was on local television in Louisville, Kentucky. The show was called Tomorrow's Champions. My goal then was to buy me a nice, beautiful car, buy my mother home. And Saturday night fights were popular at that time. And I figured if I could get on Saturday night television, we make $4,000. Boy, $4,000.
Welcome back to Drive Time Sports, KOAL 103.9 FM and 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, and today's show we're going to dedicate it to the memory of Muhammad Ali, who sadly passed away at the age of 74 on Friday. And for most who are in the sports talk radio industry, you typically get Saturday and Sunday off, at least from your show. And with Ali passing away on Friday, I was really curious to see how much sports talk radio would be geared towards his life and legacy on Monday. Let's put it this way. Every sports talk radio show in the country, and rightfully so, is doing something to honor the legacy of Muhammad Ali. Now, joining us over the phone right now, we have a great friend of the show. He is Steve Bordstein from Fox Sports 1340 in New Mexico. Steve has some personal memories of Muhammad Ali that we're going to talk about right now. Steve, as always, I appreciate you taking out the time to join us.
No, thank you. I appreciate it very much.
The passing of Muhammad Ali Friday night definitely sent shockwaves throughout the entire world, and not necessarily sports shockwaves either, or the sports world either. I mean, it affects everybody because of the humanitarian that Muhammad Ali was outside of the ring, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But first off, Steve, Muhammad Ali has a special place in your heart. You had a couple of encounters with Muhammad Ali, and your father, who was also a sports writer, wrote a couple of books on Muhammad Ali. So you were introduced to this legend at a very young age.
In 1972, my father, who had written 26 books throughout his journalism career, wrote a book in 1972. It's actually, it was on that year's New York Times bestseller list, a book called After Olympic Glory. And it was basically a look back at what athletes had accomplished after their achievements in the Olympic Games throughout the 1960s. One of the athletes he wrote about was Cassius Clay, who of course would be later on renamed to Muhammad Ali. And the book is personally dedicated to his two-year-old son, me, so there's that connection. In 1973 or four, in a photo that was taken in the dressing rooms at Madison Square Garden, there's a photo of Bert Sugar, the legendary boxing writer who passed away several years ago, my father, and perched on the shoulders of Muhammad Ali is a four-year-old Steve Bordstein. So there's that. And then in 1979, and we had met each other a few other times as a small child, and then later on, when we had moved to Colorado, my father was a sports writer for the Rocky Mountain News back in the day, there was a charity boxing event that was held at Mile High Stadium between Muhammad Ali and, at that time, Denver Bronco defensive lineman Lyle Alzado. And I don't remember what the charity was. I don't remember exactly what the event was for, but it was a charity event, and my father covered the event, and it was another opportunity for me to meet Muhammad Ali at that time. I'd never seen him since, but it's just one of those things that you have those memories and you have those indelible imprints on your life, and you know, you hear about the passing, and it has that effect on you. And that photo taken in 1973 or four, I am now the only living person in that photo. My father passed away 6 years ago, Muhammad Ali obviously this past weekend, and Bert Sugar several years ago. So I had written about it on Facebook and with social and some people on social media, and one of my cousins who lives in New York, he's like valiantly now saying, no, I will find this picture because it belongs somewhere. I don't know if it's in the bottom of a landfill. I don't know if it's with my father's widow. He remarried after my parents are divorced. I don't know where that photo is, but I'd really like to have it back.
The definition of epic and legendary has that photo next to it. You met Muhammad Ali in a time where we didn't have cell phone cameras, we didn't have Facebook, we didn't have Twitter. Muhammad Ali behind the curtain of the TV cameras, not selling a fight, not talking trash to his opponent. A lot of that trash talk may have been fabricated to sell a fight. What was Muhammad Ali like behind the curtain?
Just the most genuinely kind person. I mean, didn't have, he wasn't, you know, the seller of fights. He was a gentleman. He adored, you know, the fact that he had fans. He was, I think he was flabbergasted, to use, for lack of a better term, that he had fans. I think he was shocked by it, by his influence on people. Because I think we get this impression nowadays, and I think it's probably in large part due to social media, in large part due to how we look at athletes. I think we get this idea that they are impenetrable and that they are immune to fans and they are immune to emotion and things like that. And Muhammad Ali was anything but. Muhammad Ali, I think, was amazed at the amount of attention he received when he wasn't Muhammad Ali the salesman, when he wasn't Muhammad Ali the fighter, when he was just Muhammad Ali, as amazing a man as he was in that spate of time. I think he was still kind of amazed by that. And that was the thing that I remember the most, meeting him again when I was 9. Obviously, when you're 4, you kind of romanticize your memories of these people. But 9 years old, you kind of have an idea about people a little bit. And my recollection and my father's recollection of him in conversations later on in life was always that he was just gentle. He was a sincere individual who really did, I think later on in life, understand that his words did have some importance. His words did have some, whether value or they had a repercussion to them. And I think he spent a lot of time trying to rehab that image a little bit. I think he spent a little bit of time trying to repair some of those images. And you and I have talked about that a little bit as well, you know, in relation to Joe Frazier. And I think he was genuinely upset at the way maybe things were interpreted, or, you know, the way he said things, you know, not interpreted, just I think the way he said things that may have come back in rather negative connotation.
Which is part of the reason why I look at Muhammad Ali, I'm intrigued by Muhammad Ali the man, because this is a guy, and I talked about this earlier on your show with you, this is a guy that we've seen evolve during the 74 years that he spent here on planet Earth. I mean, this was a different Muhammad Ali on Thursday that we saw in 1971 when he was gearing up for the fight of the century against Joe Frazier. He continued to evolve, and outside of the ring, he continued throughout his entire life to become an even greater humanitarian.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that, I think a lot of what happened with the Frazier incident, and I think a lot of who he was as a person, was probably rehabbed to some massive extent based on the 1996 Olympic Games, when he does the official torch lighting ceremony, and there was all the secretiveness about who was going to light the torch at the Atlanta Games, and a lot of people had speculated it was going to be Evander Holyfield, a lot of people had speculated it was going to be an American track star, and you see him and how his body had already been ravaged by Parkinson's, and he stands there in front of millions of people in the television audience. And if you really want a great piece of audio, listen to the words of Bob Costas and Dick Enberg, because they had no idea that was going to happen. They had no idea that it was going to be Muhammad Ali, and it's a great moment in television history. And I think that was the moment where Muhammad Ali stopped being that guy who disparaged America. He stopped being that guy who turned his back on his country. And I think we looked at Muhammad Ali from that point on with a different set of lenses. And Jordan, you know this in sports. You know, it takes one moment. We are a very forgiving society. As Americans, we're a forgiving society. And whether it was that iconic moment or whether it was his work, I believe it was in Iraq earlier in the last decade, when he was responsible for the freeing of hostages overseas, it's those moments like that, or you know, maybe it was, you know, the fact that maybe it was his relationship with Nelson Mandela. It's any of those things. But as a society, we're very forgiving, and I think he stopped being the draft dodger. He stopped being kind of the race baiter that he was with the Joe Frazier comments, and he became a hero, I think, to a lot of us at that moment.
You know, I agree, and the person that he became later on. I mean, here's a story from a dear friend of Elvis Presley. Of course, those who listen to the show enough, they know that I'm a huge Elvis Presley fan. George Klein, who was one of Elvis's best friends, said Muhammad Ali returned to Memphis once upon a time after Elvis's passing to give a tribute to Elvis in front of a crowd. As Muhammad Ali was leaving, There stood a man next to his black limo holding a Bible, telling Ali that he needed to repent in order for him to be saved and to get to heaven. And the guy was saying some really rotten things to Muhammad Ali. And George Klein said, I sat and I watched this. Ali got in his limo. The limo drove away. It stops. It backs up. Ali gets out. He walks over to the smaller man, picks him up, kisses him on the left side of the cheek, kisses him on the right side of the cheek, puts him back down on the ground, gets in his limo, and they drive away. I love that story.
It's a great story. See it? And that's, I think, that's, it's those things like that. And I think as we go through the next few days, because whenever a celebrity passes, Jordan, we, and you know this, you know, we've just had a few of them in the last several months. David Bowie, we've had Prince, and you go back a few years to Michael Jackson, you go back, you know, to any major athlete, actor, personality, and when they pass, there's the initial reflection on their career. And then you start to peel back the onion a little bit, and you realize more about this person. You realize, all right, maybe they weren't as perfect as we wanted them to be or as our image made them out to be. Now with the Prince story, it's the opioids and it's the fact that he OD'd on narcotics. So that becomes a story. And I think what's going to happen over the next few days is it's going to steer this story away a little bit from the boxer, and it's going to steer this story away a little bit from the philanthropic, charitable donations he made and his philanthropic concerns and his humanitarian. And then we're going to get to some of the darker stuff of Muhammad Ali. And I'll be curious to see where the direction, where that story goes from there, because I think as a society, I think we've moved on. And I think, you know, because of social media, you know, he was Twitter before there was Twitter. He was your instant sounding board. He was your instant soundbite material. And I think we look at it differently now because it was such a bygone era. It's such a different era. And I think people today would have, loved Muhammad Ali in the 70s. And I think we would have probably accelerated the process of being that more tolerant society. I think if there had been that 24-hour news cycle, CNN, ESPN, et cetera, I think we would have seen a quicker advancement of our nation being more tolerant, of being, you know, more accepting of certain people because of the Muhammad Ali comments that he made about the war in Vietnam. I mean, imagine if he had made those comments about the war in Iraq. Imagine if he had made those comments about 9/11. I mean, and I think things like that, because he wasn't around at that time, I think those reactions to those events would have happened a lot faster.
It is, yeah, and again, anytime somebody passes away, look, one of the things that intrigues me so much about Muhammad Ali is the fact that he was not perfect. You know, a lot of people could correctly identify him as a hypocrite at some particular time in his day. That's what fascinates me about Muhammad Ali, a guy that was built up to be a god inside the boxing ring, has human flaws. That's what fascinates me about this guy.
Absolutely, and I think that's what makes him such a compelling story to so many of us, you know, today. And let's face it, if it's not for Muhammad Ali, and you know, you and I are sports guys at the end of the day, if it's not for Muhammad Ali, I would dare say we don't have the bombacity or the bombastic nature, if you will, of Floyd Mayweather. We don't have the crass statements of a Conor McGregor. And I think there's something to the fact that I just referenced two combat sport athletes. The rules of combat sports are very simple. You're locking two men in a cage, you're putting two men in a ring, and they're beating the hell out of each other. It's not like trying to explain football to someone. It's not like trying to explain one of my favorite sports, horse racing, to someone. It's difficult to explain it. It's difficult to explain football. It's difficult to explain baseball or basketball because there's so many different moving parts to it. A boxing match, a UFC fight, here it is. It's two people. We're going to give them 3 minutes. We're going to give them 3 minutes or 5 minutes around, and they're going to beat the living daylights out of the other. And there's a rawness to that, I think. And I think that when you come back to, you know, the vocalization of that and the promotion of that, it's what makes Muhammad Ali. It's what made him so popular, and I think it's what in turn has led to these, you know, dynamic type personalities. As much as we don't like Adrian Broner, you know, you can specifically trace trace Adrian Broner to Floyd Mayweather. And you can trace Floyd Mayweather back to Conor, back to Muhammad Ali. I think that's what's going to, we're going to see that in like next 20, 30 years, the 6 degrees of Muhammad Ali, because he was that iconic a speaker as well as a celebrity athlete.
Well, and he was a celebrity athlete that we wanted to hear his opinion. I think in this day and age with social media, everybody thinks they have a voice that needs to be heard. Very few actually have the ability that comes with the responsibility of having your voice heard on a large platform. Ali embraced it.
Absolutely. Ali embraced it, and I think he understood the importance of it. And, you know, that goes back a little bit to, you know, the early days of Don King. I mean, let's face it, he was a big part of Ali's success, especially later in his career. Maybe not from a boxing standpoint, but certainly from an economic standpoint, was that, you know, they needed to sell fights. And
right.
How do you sell fights better than having a guy just yelling a lot? That's the way you sell fights. The way you sell UFC fights is the way we sell fights today. And, I mean, that was a large part of Ali's game later in his career, and early in his career. But I think, you know, you can trace all these things back to certain individuals in these respective sports. And in a way, were they bad people? Some of them, maybe Don King a little bit, sure. But we needed those people. They were there in the early years of these sports. They were there to promote these sports, and to some extent, they did a fantastic job doing it. Muhammad Ali embraced that. But that was a personality. That was a gimmick. That was who he was when he was trying to sell a fight. I think later on in life, I think some of those things, again, I think he may have looked back on some of those things later on and maybe regretted some of those things.
Steve, before I let you go, I want you to give me, in your words, the legacy of Muhammad Ali and how you're going to remember this legend.
It's funny, I was having this conversation with my girlfriend, and it's 96. To me, it's always going to be 96. I mean, yes, it's the picture in 74 in the locker room, Madison Square Garden. Because from a personal standpoint, the three of the most important men in my life are in that photo. There's Bert Sugar, you know, who we both have worked with and spoken to in the past. There's my father, and there's Muhammad Ali. So three of the most important men I've ever met in my entire life are in that photo. But it's that moment in 96. I'm not an Olympics guy as far as like the competition's concerned. I don't buy into it. I'm not a big nationalistic flag waver. That's just not who I am. But it's that moment where you see this man, his body ravaged by a disease, and he knew that moment. He wanted that moment. And I think for me, I'm always going to remember seeing this man in his glory, in all of his, in all of the horrible affliction that's going through his body. And he had the perseverance and he had the bravery to do that in front of an audience at that stadium of 70,000 people, whatever, and millions of people in front of a television audience. And it's sad and it's inspiring at the same time, because you just wanted to hear him speak the way he did that. You wanted to know that that man was still in there, that man who had that personality and that man who had that voice and that dynamic way of drawing a crowd. You knew he was still there, but it was a mixture of sadness and inspiration at the same time, and I'll always remember that about Muhammad Ali.
Steve Bordstein, Fox Sports 1340 in New Mexico. He is the host of First Sports. Steve, I know you dedicated the majority of your show today to Muhammad Ali. You can view the archives to that on your social media platform. Go ahead and tell the listeners how they can find you, and they can find archived interviews and segments and pretty much the whole shebang with First Sports.
Yeah, and Jordan, you did a great job this morning with me on the show, and I appreciate that. And we're going to be doing more tributes throughout the week over the next several days leading up to Friday's funeral and Thursday's memorial service, what have you. So go to our website at foxsports1340.com. I posted a blog up there this morning. It's available on our website's homepage. There'll be more stories throughout the week that we'll be posting up there throughout the week. You can also follow me on Twitter at Fox1340AM and on Facebook at First Sports with Steve Bordstein. The show itself, First Sports, airs weekdays 9 a.m. to noon Eastern, 7 to 10 a.m. Mountain Time. You can catch it on Fox, AM 1340, 93 FM here in New Mexico, or you can catch it online through our iHeartRadio app at our website at foxsports1340.com.
Steve, it's always great to talk to you. Thank you once again for sharing your memories and having some personal stories with Muhammad Ali. It was fantastic to get your perspective. Thank you.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate it very much. Have a great day.
We're going to pause for a quick commercial break. When we return, we're going to continue to talk about Muhammad Ali. Now we'll step inside the ring and talk about the legacy that will never be forgotten. Tony Whitby, our Drive Time Sports Boxing Insider, joins us when we return.